You are Locked On Pelicans, your daily podcast on the New Orleans Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Pelicans, the daily podcast covering your favorite team, the New Orleans Pelicans, and NBA as a whole, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day, available on Apple Podcasts, on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm your host, Jake Madison, at NolaJake on Twitter, Pelicans insider, credential member of the media, and editor over at LockedOnPelicans.com. Here with you all on this Friday, final day of podcast this week, and a lot to cover with the obvious news of the passing of Pelicans and Saints owner Tom Benson. I'm going to cover some of the stuff here with that today. That's a lot of this stuff we can kind of get into what's going to be the fallout of some of this, and it might get interesting later in the future. It doesn't need to be gone into today. I think, you know, the day of his passing, I think we can give it some time. But we do want to talk about the man and the role he's played here in the state, in the city, in my life in particular, and indirectly in all of your lives as well if you're listening to this podcast. So we'll touch on that. We'll touch on the game from last night. The Pelicans played the San Antonio Spurs. We'll recap that and then get you set for the weekend with two games coming up against the Rockets on Saturday in what should be a pretty fun one, followed up with the second night of a back-to-back on Sunday. My birthday, I'm going to be enjoying that game there against the Boston Celtics. Nothing more would I like for them to beat that team for a lot of reasons. And I'll tell you guys why in the third segment. So let's just kind of jump right into everything and see where we go in today's edition of Locked On Pelicans. So like I said, going to lead with the big news of the day, and that is the passing of Saints and Pelicans owner Tom Benson at the age of 90. He'd been in the ICU with flu symptoms for about the past 2 or 3 weeks. I forget the exact time frame behind all of it. And you could maybe see some of this was kind of headed this direction. You know, being in there that long at that age definitely can be a scary thing. And even though he's getting, you know, world-class healthcare and treatment, he's still, you know, again, the age and sickness, and this is the end result. And I think it's a pretty sad day overall if you're a Pelicans fan, if you're a Saints fan, or if you just live in the city of New Orleans or the Louisiana Gulf South region, because Tom Benson was very big in this area and a very influential person. Obviously, everyone knows he's the owner of the two sports teams. He was the richest man in Louisiana. And a lot of this has people really know him for kind of, and I don't have this scripted or planned out really, we're just going to kind of roll with it. The kind of fallout with his heirs, Rita Benson LeBlanc, his granddaughter, who kind of cut out of the will, his kids from a previous marriage, I believe were adopted, but I might be wrong on that, and it doesn't really matter. And that kind of public airing of things when they were trying to declare him mentally incompetent and that he'd been taken advantage of Gail, and so on and so forth. And we're not going to rehash all that because it doesn't really matter. Look, Benson is not a perfect person, and I don't think anyone would claim him of that. And he's had some kind of public issues, let's call it, with the city of New Orleans at times, particularly after Katrina, with the Saints potentially moving to San Antonio, where he has a lot of his business holdings out there. So, and used kind of that threat as leverage to get more out of the city for a favorable lease. And again, I don't have all the specifics in front of me. We can go into this another time to kind of basically make the situation better for himself and to keep the team here. And that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. You know, when he has a statue outside the Superdome of him, and it is kind of funny that you have built a statue of the guy who tried to move the team away at one point, but he didn't. And didn't request a $2 billion stadium to be built and charge taxpayers a ton for that, though I believe some taxpayer money went for the renovations to the Superdome and to the New Orleans Arena at different times. And they do pay him kind of indirectly in leased office space in Benson Tower and different things like that. Did better his own situation with the threat of leaving the Saints leaving. But he did keep them here. And then he did buy the Pelicans after that, the then Hornets, and that saved kind of the team from moving away. You know, there would not be basketball here, I think it's a safe bet to say, if it wasn't for Tom Benson and the purchase of the team, of which Gail was a driving force behind so that the team wouldn't move. And that is a story I've heard. So we all kind of owe Tom Benson indirectly. I get to do this podcast. I get to write about the team. I get to be on TV, which I like doing. I get to be on the radio, which I like doing. And I'm like an F-list public figure down here. And occasionally people see me out and say hi and thank me for what I do on the podcast. You guys don't need to do that, but you can just tell me you like it. You don't need to thank me. And I enjoy all this. It's fun. I like talking basketball and Pelicans and hoops with people. So, I get to do that because of Tom Benson, a man who I've met on passing in occasions and owe kind of a lot to at times. You guys know I make some money off this. This isn't my primary gig or job, but without him, I wouldn't be doing this. And so it's kind of interesting that he passes today to kind of think about that and how this podcast or just covering the team in general has been positive, very big positive impact on my life in years past. And I wrote about it over at Bourbon Street Shots last time they made the playoffs. Google it. It's called Pledging Pelicans Allegiance, on how your life gets impacted with the community and everything around this. So to see kind of the guy who, again, indirectly, this is all responsible to for pass is a very sad thing. Now, the real questions are going to come up, and that's, are they going to move the teams? Are the teams going to be sold? As of right now, you know, it sounds like Gale is in charge of the teams. That's how Tom Benson wanted it. I'm sure there will be a legal challenge from his former heirs, Renee and Rita, the most prominent known ones. And I don't know what's going to happen from that. But the NBA and NFL has approved the kind of succession and contingency plans. But that doesn't mean people are not going to come out and say this team's going to move. The organizations, both the Pels and the Saints, so far today have been very adamant and very strongly worded in their phrasing of everything that there's no problem. Gale owns the teams and it's that. Simple as that. Again, that can change. That could also just mean as of today. So we'll see kind of what the fallout and ramifications of everything are down the line. Again, we don't need to quite get into all of that till some of it comes out, and I don't know what will happen. But for Benson, you know, it's a sad day. Again, even if you don't like him because he tried to move the team, there's no denying that this guy is a very good person almost. There's, if you look just at kind of the philanthropy he does, he was very big into Catholic charities, and I know he donated a lot of his money to that. He was a graduate of Loyola University here in New Orleans. He donated a lot of money to them. I know over at Tulane's football stadium, the name of which, even though I've been there a bunch, Yulman Stadium, the field is named Tom Benson Field. So Tom Benson Field at Yulman Stadium. So a lot of philanthropy, a lot of charity work making things happen here in New Orleans. So with his passing, the city, the state, and the region definitely loses a giant and someone very important to all of that. And he's going to be missed. You saw all the players coming out and saying how much they're going to miss him, how much he impacted them. Deuce McAllister had a really great one talking about that. And then, you know, you saw a second line going to his statue in Champion Square yesterday, kind of from the Treme area to there. And they partied there for a little bit, which I thought was pretty cool. And we'll see if they do an actual big second line for him. But again, a sad day. You know, this is a day I'm sure we'll all remember. Again, we would not have basketball here if it really wasn't for him. The NBA owned the team at the time. After George Shinn just couldn't do it financially anymore, you know, after Gary Schwest and all of those deals really seemed like they're falling through, it was looked like maybe an outside person was going to buy the team. And, you know, David Stern really wanted to keep the team here locally and didn't want them to relocate under his watch. But there's only so many people that could have bought the franchise and kept them here and who were local, and that list is very small, and they managed to get the big one. So look, there will be some fallout from all of this. There will be people, and I don't need to name any of the names, I'm sure you've already seen, talking about how, you know, they think the team's going to be moving. Don't worry about any of it right now. We can discuss those if it comes to it. There's no point in getting upset. And I always kind of find the irony in the situation, or it to be an ironic situation, when people don't want this stuff to get out there and they're like, well, I'm going to scream at him because I don't want wrong information out, yet you call more attention to it by doing that. So look, screw that. Listen to the podcast. Don't worry about anything else. The teams aren't going anywhere. I feel very confident in Gail. I felt that since the beginning when all of this was going on. She doesn't want to move the team from what my understanding is. We can go into the legal situation of it, but I mean, she's his wife. There's no real inheritance tax here in Louisiana. I could keep going on and on and on about it. Maybe we'll get a lawyer on at some point to kind of talk a lot about this, but you can leave basically a lot or most of your assets to your spouse with no taxes there. So there's really, no real worry whatsoever about what's going on. Make sure you subscribe to the Locked On NBA podcast. You guys know I'm on there every Wednesday, recapping the action from Tuesday night, previewing Wednesday's games, and talking about the biggest stories. But the podcast is 5 days a week. Know what's going on around the association. Get caught up on everything. There's too many games to watch them all, but you're big basketball fans. So make sure you know what's happening. Subscribe to the Locked On NBA podcast. So the Pelicans lost last night 98-93 against the San Antonio Spurs, a game they really needed to win, and it could have been the first time that the team wins three in a row over the Spurs. The Pels were down by as many as 15, but kind of battled back twice, really, to get close and keep it close towards the end. But there's a lot of reasons the team lost this game. They did not get foul calls from the officials. That was pretty bad. They scored at only 15 points in the third quarter and only had 4 points through that third period with about 4 minutes left to go in the frame. So that's not going to be good either, though they held San Antonio to 18 points during that time frame. So again, you look at all this, it could have been worse. Anthony Davis fouled out. You know, that's never a recipe for disaster. They had to play the final 3 minutes without him. And they kind of let the Spurs do what they want offensively for a little bit, at least in the first quarter, where they gave up 37 total points. So to see them only lose by five seems good, right? Not really. There were some things that are kind of head-scratching here, which we will go into. But first, Anthony Davis, 21 points on the night, 14 boards, 8 of 19 from the field. Jrue Holiday finished with 24 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists. He's continuing that kind of high level of play. Ian Clark was good. You've seen him play much better, and I think a lot of that has to do with him being paired with Jrue Holiday in the lineup and kind of having fewer minutes with Rajon Rondo, who we will get to. He finished with 16, and then Etuan Moore had 11 in the start, of course, for the Pels. Not the best shooting night overall. The Pels shot 40% from the field, only took 90 shot attempts. They'd like more than that. That's why they play that fast-paced offense, and there's a reason they really only managed to get 93 points total. 16 turnovers for the Pels, 44 points in the paint. They did get some fast break, 21 points, which is pretty good. Just not enough, and that third quarter of 15 points really killed them. They kind of lacked an identity down the stretch late in the fourth to really make it a game. And there were just costly mistakes, bad turnovers, a jump ball that the Pelicans were lucky to win on an offensive possession of theirs. Anthony Davis fouling out doesn't help. Mirotić was not good on the night. Only took 2 3-point attempts. And that final shot attempt, so, you know, the Pels kind of keep it close. They get to the line down three. Jrue Holiday misses one of them, makes the other. They take too long to foul, and what's really kind of mind-blowing, wasted 5 seconds in that case to foul. You got to foul immediately there. There were like 19 seconds left. That ran the clock down and eventually just made it so that the Pels ran out of time. They get down there, and Ginobili makes his shots, and then, of course, Holiday goes to the line again, makes both of those, so they're still down two at that point, and they foul the Spurs, who make one, and then when you have one timeout left, they sub out, the Pels sub out Emeka Okafor, leave Mirotić in there, which was surprising. You're going to call that timeout make or miss, so why sub out a guy who can maybe get the board? But Mirotić manages to secure the rebound. Pels call a timeout. They run a play out of a timeout that was not great. Mirotić takes a corner three, which looked like his foot was on the line, and also that shot hits the side of the backboard from the corner, so a rushed, not good shot. Spurs rebound, or got, it went out of bounds, I forget now, and they win. And it's that. This was just not a well-coached, well-done game by the Pels. Rajon Rondo played 24 minutes on the night, and he was bad. Like, there's no other way to put it. He looked really bad out there for the team, and you needed fewer Rajon Rondo minutes. So I don't know why Ian Clark gets 32, and then Rondo gets 23, and you don't give maybe DeAndre Liggins another look, or Larry Drew, the second who you just signed. And we've seen the Pels over a number of years now put in guys who just came in off of the street. And you kind of ran Rondo out there to start the fourth quarter when you really probably needed Clark. Could have done the rotations a little bit differently because he killed you out there on the court last night. The Spurs took advantage of that. And you saw it defensively. He wasn't there. Deontay Murray finished with 18 on the night. LaMarcus Aldridge either was making shots or getting blocked by Anthony Davis for the most part. He finished with 25 on the night. Murray also had 12 rebounds for him. He's an interesting player. And, you know, Manu Ginobili was that crafty, annoying-ass veteran who got Anthony Davis fouled out on a call that maybe, probably shouldn't have been called that way. Look, the refs didn't do the Pelicans any favors in this game. But at the same point, you need to, I don't know, score and do other things and not factor that in. And your defense is what kept San Antonio scoring and from you really being able to get over everything. So it's just kind of one of those games. We just move on, I guess, and hopefully you can rebound this weekend and get one win, because you're really going to need it going forward. This was, again, a very winnable game for the Pelicans. The Spurs didn't play great offense. 98 points is not very good from them. They didn't shoot well whatsoever. They shot under 40%, 37.4%. And shot just 26.9% from three and still managed to get the win. That's how out of sorts and the offense looked so bad from the Pelicans at times that they allowed that to happen. Don't forget, make sure you check out LockedOnPelicans.com daily. Question of the week up right now. Not really a question. We're just kind of talking about Tom Benson and kind of what you're going to maybe remember most from him. And as I've said, for me, it's just I get to do what I do now because of him. If there was no team here, I wouldn't be covering him like this. So it's, you know, I'm indirectly benefited from that. And it's a guy you kind of think about and thank because that all happened, but make sure you go read it over at LockedOnPelicans.com and share with us your remembrance of Tom Benson. So we do have some games this weekend here in New Orleans as the Pelicans hit the rough part of their schedule. Now they have Saturday against the Houston Rockets. The last time Houston really had a big loss, kind of, well, really, they've had two losses in their last however many games. But it was that fateful night that DeMarcus Cousins ruptured his Achilles tendon, and the Pelicans upset the Rockets 115-113 back on January 26th, that Friday. Before the Pelicans hit a bit of a dip and then running off 10 straight. You know, you kind of look at that game for maybe the formula on how to beat Houston, and it's not going to be that easy, or, you know, it's going to be a bit of a different game that time. Houston's beatable in a couple of different ways. You don't want to run and get in a shootout with them. Basically, you've seen the Pelicans in their matchups so far this year really try and take away the three-point shot from the Rockets. You don't want them getting close to like 18 to 23s, and they take the most in the league by a fair margin. But the Pels want to limit that and are willing to give up the inside, the shots in the paint, to try and make that happen. So on the season, this number's just like mind-blowing to me. The Rockets take 42.2 threes per game. In that last victory for the Pels against them, they held the Rockets to just 36 three-point attempts. So obviously still a lot, but well below the average. They only hit 12 of those, which was really big because if they start hitting threes, it becomes a math thing and you're not going to have the three-point shooting to keep up with them. You force them to kind of take those shots inside, let them drive and score that way. Then you can at least keep up by making twos and not threes. That's what the Pelicans want to do. And you don't want to try and outshoot this team. James Harden that last game was largely ineffective. He went 1 of 9. So again, you run them off the three-point line, kind of force them and funnel them into Emeka Okafor to Anthony Davis, something we've seen the Pelicans be pretty good at so far. You also got to try and outshoot them a little bit in terms of E field goal percentage. So, you know, you're not going to hit a ton of threes in this game necessarily. You've got to make sure you're getting the best looks possible otherwise. So that's going to be important. And then the final big thing is something the Pelicans don't do, and that's going to be offensive rebounding. Houston is very good on the defensive glass. They're actually third best in the league. You can't let them just corral those easy rebounds because then they push it in transition, and that's how they outscore you and play the kind of style that they want to play. Even though they're not the fastest paced team in the league, though they play up tempo style of everything, they kind of are closer to the middle of the pack, so nowhere near as fast as the Pels, but they don't mind running should things kind of come to that. So you've got to be on the at least attack the offensive glass to slow down those fast breaks for Houston. Try and punish them a little bit for those guys leaking out in transition and trying to get ahead to get those easy transition buckets. If you can do that, you can kind of slow down their offense at least a little bit and try and force them to play someone in the half court. It's going to be a tough uphill game for the Pelicans. I think this is one you kind of may be writing off as a loss. The good news is, though, that the Celtics come to town next, and they're very injured. So the Pelicans might be catching them at the right time. You know, Jaylen Brown is out with that scary concussion that he had earlier. Gordon Hayward's been out for basically all of the season. He recently had a bit of a setback in his rehab. Al Horford's been out recently, but he'll be back, assuming, for this game. You've got Kyrie Irving, who's been sidelined. They said maybe he'll play either against the Magic tonight or the Pelicans Sunday. Potentially, we don't know yet. If he's out, that's a huge advantage for the Pels here. And then Marcus Smart is still got a torn tendon in his thumb, and he's going to be out for maybe the rest of the season. And then Daniel Theis also is out for the rest of the season, their defensive backup big man, which is definitely a good thing because Anthony Davis could have kind of some free reign in this game a little bit. Look, Boston's still very sound defensively, even despite all of this, and they just took the Washington Wizards to double overtime despite all of their injuries. So you can't just let them hang around. You need to try and end this one early, get them into a hole, and let them just kind of sit players down and rest them. If they're down 10-15 at the third or something like that, and Kyrie Irving is playing, you might just get them to put him away and not let him risk getting injured in a blowout loss. That's going to be very important. It's also my birthday. Win for me. Also, John Corrales of Locked On Celtics, who I co-host the Locked On NBA podcast on Wednesday. And as I record this, we're going to be cutting things up in the podcast today. The magic of editing. Still watching the end of the Pels game here. It's close. There's a chance it's going to kind of impact how we talk about it. So he'll be in town. He's visiting New Orleans. He'll be at the game. So I don't want him to win. We don't want him to be happy, right? Well, we want him to be happy, but maybe not Sunday afternoon after this game. We want him to just enjoy New Orleans and have to drink all of his troubles away, which I've no doubt he will be doing. So look, Boston's still a good team. They're still sound defensively. They can still go out and score. You've seen Marcus Morris, their power forward, who stepped in and is playing outstanding form. He's been putting up big games. You're going to have to see Anthony Davis be very active on the defensive end. He's been gassed recently. You can see how tired he is in this game right now against the San Antonio Spurs. And it's, you know, this schedule is only tough. This is the second night of a back-to-back. They're going to have to find minutes for him. You got to wonder if this Pelicans team might run out of gas late in this one. It's a very big concern. We've talked about it over the past couple of weeks here that, yeah, they need to kind of get some rest, and it's going to be interesting. You know, the Pels need to play up-tempo in this one, even though they kind of need some rest. You still got to play your kind of style of everything. You can dictate the pace in this one. The Celtics play in a bottom third pace in the league. They don't want a guy to get out there and run and have it be a ton of possessions and have to defend in the half court, especially with all of these injuries. You're going to get mismatches there if you can push the ball in transition, which is definitely going to be a good thing. They're not a good offensive rebounding team. They're not going to go for offensive boards, so you should be able to corral those defensive rebounds. Talked about how I don't think rebounding is really a huge, huge issue for this team. They're still winning despite having poor ranks when it comes to defensive rebounding, but you still got to kind of go out there and get those misses to push in transition. They can do that against this banged up Celtics team. I think you have a chance, but it's still going to be tough on the second night of a back-to-back. So that's going to do it for this edition of Locked On Pelicans. Again, kind of a very sad day. Not kind of, it is a sad day with the passing of Tom Benson. One last thing I want to mention with that before we really do wrap up the podcast here is that, you know, look at how the players, former players and current Pelicans have talked about him too. Talking about how when Drew was at, I think it was in North Carolina with his family, with his wife and everything, Benson gave the team his plane to go out there and visit Drew. And I think that kind of tells you all you need to kind of know about that guy, and it's a good thing. So despite all the unpleasantness, and there was some, you know, again, there's definitely some controversy in his past, a lot more good than bad. And really, when you look at the bad, it's not sexual assault scandals or anything like that. So overall, I think you have to kind of be pretty happy with the guy who has owned these both these franchises and saved them more than once. Don't forget, you know, the Saints were on the verge of moving to Jacksonville when he bought the team as well. So really nice to see the outpouring of support for the Benson family in the wake of everything that came out. So that will do it for this edition of Locked On Pelicans. Enjoy the games this weekend. I'm going to be having a lot of fun out there. Hopefully the Pelicans can get one win. That'd be good, right? And then I'll be back with you all on Monday to recap everything.